Hello, everyone. I want to thank you for joining us here at the Evolving RPG DM series. We are starting our phase two of interviews now. We've mixed up some of the questions, and we've got another pool of great game masters, dungeon masters, and people interested in tabletop role playing. I am your host, the Humble Great Home, and conducting today's interview with a good friend of mine, Anarchy. I've known him for a number of years and played in a couple of his games and thought he'd be interesting person to talk to and interview, and he was kind enough to take some time out of his busy schedule to meet with us and kind of go over all things tabletop.
Very busy, because there are always players to torture.
A busy, there's somewhere there's a player that is right now not being tormented or fearful of some sort of calamity that's beseeching them. So most of the players.
Don't be so sure, sir. Don't be so sure. I hope I've caused at least a handful of nightmares. Just a few, you know.
Well, I will forget this. Recently, in one of the first games I played with you in a while, you actually managed to kill my character at the end of the adventure. I almost made it all the way through alive. Didn't quite make it. So got almost to the end and was like, oh, really? Within the last 30 minutes. So
it was a one shot. You know, it was a one shot.
It was a one shot.
It's going to happen. Down, you know, so. Somebody's got to die in a one shot. I mean, it wasn't personal, dude. You know, it was just, that's just how it works sometimes, you know.
I think you had one other character in critical condition too. So that was a great one. Yeah, we had one in critical, and this was Marvel Superheroes. That's a game that's really hard to manage. That,
you have to know your animal, sir.
I really appreciate you coming on, Anarchy. Why don't you give the listeners a quick little rundown of your history of your experiences as a game master and just how long you've been doing this?
Gotcha. Yeah. So when I was a kid, like the very first role-playing game I ever bought was Top Secret, right? And I was, I think, 8 or 9 years old. And so anyway, I bought it from B. Dalton, so you know how long ago that was. But at any rate, I bought Top Secret, and at the time, I had no idea what an RPG was. No clue, right? I thought it was a board game. So I got home, and I tore it all open. I was so excited because, like, the spy genre... I've always loved Bond movies, and it started way back then. And so anyway, I get it home and I open it and I'm like, what the heck is this? What? Where's the board, right? Where are the little pieces, right? None of that is there. What are these strange dice? Like, where did they come from? What do I use them for? So I was very confused and disappointed at first. And then of course I was intrigued though, because it was about spies. And so of course I read it, but as an 8-year-old, it was a lot to take in, and I really didn't understand, you know, like, what am I supposed to do? I can make a character, but I have to run the game because there's no game master. And of course I bought it, so I'm not responsible for running it, right? And so I did manage to find a handful of classmates to play with, and we had a handful of adventures once I'd figured out the rules. But even then, I still didn't have a firm grasp of it. And then I would revisit it, you know, every now and again. I would get the urge to play it again, because again, I just, a genre that I loved and or still do. So I played in Top Secret games in high school, but most of my gaming experience was college and then post college. So I met Sunde at LensCrafters way back in the 90s, and I knew somehow, I don't remember how I knew, but I knew that he played in a lot of role-playing games, and he was a dungeon master. And I just started asking him one day about, like, hey, you're into D&D. What's that like? How do you play that? What do you do? And so I played in my first Dungeons & Dragons game was soon day after that. And then played in Marvel and Dungeons & Dragons, Paranoia. I GM Paranoia games. I still have yet to GM a Dungeons & Dragons game. And then back in 2009, to make a long story very short, in 2009, I had a bad breakup, and I was lamenting the fact that I didn't see my friends enough. Like, I didn't connect with the people that I know and love as often as I wanted to. And I thought, well, how could I do that more often? And simply, boom, just a light went off in my head. And it's like, it was simply that I could, you know, start a Marvel game, right? Start a Spycraft game, something along those lines. And so in the desire to want to see my friends again and again be in the same place with them and just have a good time, right? And this is something that we all, you know, enjoy and love.
Right, absolutely. Yeah.
I just, what's that?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, definitely. So we're connecting with groups. So
right. So I decided to start a Marvel campaign, and we've been playing the same continuous storyline, the same continuous game with almost all the same people. We've traded out a few people here and there. Some people moved away. Some people had to quit. But we've now been playing for 7 years. Knock on wood, more than 7 years. We're on our like eighth year now. And it's been so awesome because we've been able to create this huge sprawling world that has hundreds and hundreds of characters that we've all created together. And it's been a tremendously like fun journey. Like I wouldn't trade like what we do on Sunday nights for anything, because it's just so much fun all the time. And it's been just one of the great pleasures of my life to be able to you know, tell stories, and not just tell stories, but, you know, torture players, because they're players. That's what they're for. Not entirely. but mostly, you know. So anyway, I love my players. Don't get me wrong. But yeah, that's basically 90%, 99% of all of my GM experience specifically has come from the Marvel game that I'm running right now. So
okay, that's cool. So now I take it that you enjoy running the game. It sounds like you primarily do that. What kind of led you to kind of taking that role as opposed to a player where you're the one running the game?
What led me to being a GM?
Led you in that direction where instead of, you know, it could have been the player, you know, but hey, I'm going to run the game instead. What kind of led you into that direction?
Gotcha. Well, mostly it was, I found I kind of naturally fit into that role. Like it wasn't one that I was comfortable with at first. And let me tell you a few reasons why. I had only played in a handful of Marvel campaigns, and none of them were more than like 4 or 5 months at the longest up until 2009. And all the guys that I play with, I didn't read comic books that much as a kid. They have all read comic books since they were, you know, since they could read. They've all played Marvel at that point in time much more than I had. And it was one of those things where I thought, I guess I felt incumbent upon me. This is something that I want to do. This is something that, you know, I want to see my friends. So I can't, I felt like it was my responsibility in that way, right? If this is something that I want to bring together, well, then I have to take charge of it and make it happen, which means I'm going to be the GM, even though I don't know if that's going to be a role that's going to work out for me, because again, everybody I was playing with is more experienced. So, but they were able to help me out, especially with rules and figuring out storylines and things like that. And Sunde, again, being a very experienced role player, an excellent role player, one of the best role players that I know, also later told me, and I also kind of picked up on it back then, that he was kind of taking it easy on me. He wasn't pushing, like he could have pushed the limits of his character much further. He was specifically kind of dialing it back because he knew I was new in that role. And so having good players makes the whole game, really, ultimately. So
oh yeah, absolutely. So now when you do run games, are you more prone to write your own stories, or do you run pre-printed modules? Have you run any pre-printed modules, or is it pretty much exclusively stories that you write? You know, you created this vast Marvel world. I'm assuming that was
when yeah,
you
no. created, so. Yeah. And actually, I've been thinking a lot about this because I've been listening to the other podcasts, right? And gleaming some ideas from other GMs. And it's cool to hear, right? Because it's not a conversation that happens very often. You know, there's no like GM conference, right? There really should be, you know, right?
We need to get everybody together so we can share ideas here, because it's kind of an awkward thing to kind of just bring up out of the blue. Like, hey, are you a dungeon master? It's like, no. People kind of look at you like, what? What are you talking about?
Who told you that? Who gave you that idea?
Yeah, what do you mean? So,
right. I'm a professional geek, right? Well, actually, I'm an amateur. I don't get paid to do it yet, but.
Yeah, exactly.
I would love to, you know.
We're still amateur
geeks. I'm sorry. So what was your question? I'm sorry. I lost track. I lost my thought.
No problem. Are you, you know, you're running your games. Are you more likely to use a pre-printed module, or do you prefer to run your own stories?
Right. No. I I love to write my own stories. Like with Marvel, I haven't used any pre-printed stuff. When I did play Top Secret, I ran some of the modules. And just to tell you a very short story, one time in particular, the players were, all the PCs are, they're cornered in this room in a hotel, right? And gunmen have broken in and have started shooting. And of course the PCs fire back and they managed to kill, right, the first wave that came in, the first five. And then another wave of five comes in and they kill all of them. And then another wave and another wave, right? So they've literally killed 20 people. Like this small room, which is like a laundry room, right, is filled with bodies. And they're like, dude, like, what are you trying to accomplish? Like, what are you doing, right? And I'm like, listen, it says right here in the directions, they just keep coming. Like, no matter what happens, like, the guards, they just have infinite guards.
And just running through the mound of bodies in front of the door, you're now stuck in the room because of the...
Right. So that was one of those times where, like, the module sort of failed in that sense, but it made for a funny moment, right? Like, yeah. The one thing that didn't go right is the thing I'm still talking about, you know, like, 15, 20 years later, right? So, yeah, but no, both I write all of my own Marvel stuff. And so in 2009, again, right, that's when I decided to start this Marvel game that we're playing now. And again, the intent was pure in the sense that it was, I wanted to connect with my friends and I wanted to hang out with them more. And then what I've realized as in my time as a Marvel GM, the reason why I do it now is different. The why is different now. What I mean by that is, like, I've always been in love with the idea of supervillains or just villains in general, mm-hmm. because they make things happen. They make all the action, right? Like, to go to James Bond for a moment, right? Like, one of the reasons why I love James Bond movies is because James Bond is always the same character, right? I mean, it's played different by different people, but it's basically always the same. He has the cool guns, right? He has all the cool toys. Mm-hmm. He gets all the beautiful women. The only thing that's really different about Bond stories is the villain, right? So the villain becomes like super important, right? If the villain is crappy, then the story just, it's not as good. The antagonist has to be able to, you know, actually challenge James Bond on some kind of level, intellectually, physically, you know, whatever, right? And if that's not there, right, it just doesn't work, you know? So now what I've come to find out in terms of like, why is it that I'm a GM? Why do I write all of these things? It's because I'm busy living out all of my, like, you know, criminal, super spy, villain fantasies in a safe space where no one gets hurt, right? There's zero body count, right? Like, because I'm sure other people have had this experience. You walk into a bank, right? And you happen to wonder, like, if I was robbing the bank, how would I do that, right? Well, I've never robbed a bank and I have no plans on robbing a bank because I like being free, right? But it's nice to have that space to work that out in terms of if I want mutants to rob a bank or if I want supervillains to rob a bank or hijack the world's nuclear arsenal, right? I can think about how that would happen and then present that to my players as a problem, obviously. So
that's cool.
And then, of course, thinking about things that are even more intricate than that, and then stacking crimes on top of crimes and orchestrating, you know, just criminal mayhem in general. I love being able to do that. I love being able to surprise players. And that's the favorite villain I've created is named Mr. Anarchy, and he's just completely crazy. And basically he's my, not testament, he's my tribute basically to the Joker, because I've always loved the Joker. The Joker is probably definitely my favorite Batman villain. And because of how Mr. Anarchy, because he's nuts, he can multiply, he can make multiple copies of himself. And so as I was trying to figure out, like, how would one keep track of all of that? If I could make multiple copies of myself, would it be possible to stay sane? And I don't think so, which is why he's nuts, essentially. And so because of that, it gives me complete, like, artistic freedom to do whatever I want with that particular character, which is one of the reasons why I love him, in that he can decide that he hates Chicago one day and orchestrate a sarin gas attack from the top of the Willis Tower, and then just as easily bomb the city with candy, which he also did in a different adventure, because sometimes he just loves the city and that's how it works. So it's so yes, I write all of my own things, and because of I'm able to just pull from the headlines, because our game happens, it keeps we keep pace with real time. So when you know, Trump became president, Trump is president in our Marvel universe, right? It's the same thing. Okay. And because of that, I can, when things happen in the world, right, I can draw off of that. I can, you know, here's the event that happened, and of course we all know how it happened in the news, but in our Marvel universe it happened, you know, this way and so. So does that make sense?
Absolutely. No, I appreciate that. Okay. Thank you. And that kind of leads into another question there. You know, some of the influences you had with the Joker and kind of taking the headlines and putting them into these different adventures and games you want. How would you describe your particular game mastering style?
I would describe it as I'll tell you another short story. So I forget precisely how it happened, but another friend of ours, Chris Pence, he was telling me about an action movie or something to that effect, and he said something, and the Steve Brown Action Theater proudly presents, right, like today's action story, today's action-packed story, because I love action, I love thinking about fight scenes and the choreography and how all that goes down. So I would describe my games as action packed. You know, like you never quite know what's going to happen. I mean, I've blown up at least three different like Avengers HQs. There's a
kind of like the exit.
There's a. I'm sorry.
Oh, I was going to say it was kind of like Xavier's Mansion. How many times did that get blown up in X-Men?
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Like the school for the mutant school has been blown up just recently. Right. Just as an example. And it's been blown up at least one other time. So, yeah, no, I like lots of action. I like bringing players. I like, for lack of a better word, I mean combat. Right. Like, I mean, it fits very well with that, with the whole comic book genre. Right. Like, I mean, you know, there are times when I know that I should dial it back because it's something that I really like and the players have come to expect. So much so that I think just about everybody in our Marvel group has a body resistance or body armor of some kind. And of course, you know, they wear flak jackets and they wear beta cloth. And I was pondering that one day. I'm like, why is it that everybody is so armored? And then I'm like, idiot, you've made it that way, right? Like when they get shot, when they get attacked, right, on a weekly basis, that's gonna happen. So yeah, they're prepared and you've made it that way. They're just reacting to the world as you presented it. So yeah, that's how I would describe it. And I try to be I know that I can do that and I can have a lot of fun with that. But I also realize that there are times when people want to role play, they want to get into their characters in different ways. And that's something as a GM that I know that I have to work on, in terms of encouraging that and responding to that ways that players will enjoy and that will add to the game universe overall. So
Steve, we're going to flip that around a little bit. You know, when you've got a particular style of running the game, when you're in control of the villains, when you're in control of the story, but what about when you're the player? How do you kind of describe your play style when you're not in control of the villains in the story? What's your player style? Is it the same as when you're a game master? Or obviously there's some things you don't have control over, but what's your style of play when you're actually running in the game?
So my style of play, it's evolved over the years. And I would tell you a story. As far as I'm concerned, Sunday, my very close friend Sunday Cole is one of the best role players I know, and here's why. So when we first started our Marvel role playing game, I was watching him roll up his character stats, and he rolls a feeble, he rolls a poor, he rolls a feeble, he rolls a poor, and I was laughing hysterically, and he's looking at me like, dude, are you really gonna make me play this character? And because, of course, Sude is so good at Marvel, I was immediately thinking, yeah, yeah, dude, you're going to play this character. And he managed to roll, like, amazing for his intelligence. And then he managed to roll, I think, like, incredible resources. But those were the only good rolls that he made. All of his physical stats were terrible. He had 14 hit points, right? Like, a stiff breeze would kill his character, right? If he fell out of the... you know, if he just fell down, right, that would be a major injury for this character. At any rate, that character's name was JPEG, and I'll just refer to Sude and the character as JPEG from now on. But specifically, JPEG only had 14 hit points, and because he was so weak physically, he actually had a motorized wheelchair. It had like six tires on it. I mean, it was decked out because it was something his character could afford, but that's how he rolled into battle. And Sude, being such a good role player, took this character that could have easily died at any point in time and became the leader of the Avengers, right? Not just a guy in the back. He became the de facto leader and would lead them into battle every time, no matter how powerful the villain, no matter what the threat, like, he never, ever backed down. And finally, it took me... because of his character story, which I won't get into, I won't get into the background and all that, but it took me like a year and a half to kill that character. So the lesson that I've taken away from that is that the lesson of JPEG is this, that it doesn't really matter what your character stats are at the end of the day. It doesn't matter. As long as the player understands how to play, as long as they really, really know, if they're a really good role player, they can take any character and turn it into a badass, despite like probably every single disadvantage you may have. And that's inspired me. Specifically, we had a Bureau 13 game a while ago that Sunday was running, and you know, it's a D20 system, and all of those the best D&D character I have ever rolled up is the one that I'm playing right now. The rest of them, stat wise, have all not been very good. And so anyway, in our Bureau of 13 game, the priest that I was playing was the weakest member of the party in terms of, again, all of his stats with the exception of his wisdom. He had the best wisdom, of course, because he's a priest. But every other stat was terrible. Or not terrible, but not great. The rest of the party was more powerful than him by far. But, and so immediately I was kind of like, oh, here we go again, right? Here, there's a character that I got that wasn't great. But you know what? I'm not going to complain about it. I'm going to take that lesson that I've learned from my good friend and apply to this character and see what happens. And I had a blast playing that character because I just played him as a badass who just didn't care. He cared about his team, right? But about the threats, bring them on. I don't care what it is. I don't care what you've got. Bring it on. And that game, unfortunately, fell apart. But it wasn't because of the... it was just, you know, personality conflicts, things like that happen from time to time. But I had a blast playing that priest, and he was very much just run up into the action and into a fisticuffs immediately, no matter what. Again, the same sort of spirit that JPEG had. So I played that way for a little while, and now the character that I'm playing. So our Marvel universe is very complex. So I run the Avengers game in the same universe. My friend Sude / JPEG runs a S.H.I.E.L.D. campaign in that same universe. And so when he's GMing in our universe, I'm playing Julian Nightstorm, my S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. And because I like action, I like combat. So all of my characters are generally combat oriented in some way, even if they're weak, right? They can still go in and mix it up in some kind of way. But I decided to play differently with Julian Nightstorm. So Julian Nightstorm isn't the first guy to run in or just pull a gun and just start shooting. He is the exact opposite in that he'll get right up into whatever's going on, but he tries to talk his way out of it rather than shoot his way out, because my play style before was always to shoot my way out or shoot my way in. And now I'm trying something different in terms of, again, just trying to talk our way into situations or talk our way out of situations, which actually in many ways has been more fun because it's worked so often.
That's cool. And for our listeners who, if you're not familiar with the Marvel Superheroes role-playing game, it's gone through a couple generations, but Anarchy is referring to the TSR version of it, the, or what's known as the Phase Rip Marvel system, where your power rankings are actually descriptions. You know, so feeble doesn't just mean, oh, it's a low stat. It actually is called feeble. Typical is the typical ranking that most normal humans have, going on up from excellent, incredible, amazing, unearthly. So these various adjectives that you could use to describe your character's abilities actually are the abilities that you have. So, but no, that's really interesting there, Anarchy. Now, kind of taking it to another step, kind of digging a little bit deeper to this, you know, your game mastering style, your player style, this interest in gaming, how does that affect other creative aspects of your life? You know, you're creating these stories, you know, you walk into a building and you're like, hey, you know, I could set up a story here. What if these events happened? And I can tell you from personal experience, I kind of have the same thing. I go in somewhere and I see things and it's like, oh, wait a minute, what if there was a fight in this grocery store? How could a hero that, you know, get out of a jam if there were a situation that came up? You know, could he leap over these aisles? But, you know, that constant kind of storytelling mode that you find yourself in, has that crossed any other creative activities of your life or other things that you've done that have been influenced by gaming?
Yeah. Let me clarify one thing. I used to write, like, in great detail, Marvel adventures, right? Step A, step B, step C. Okay, now Roman numeral 2 and A and B and C and so on, right? And I'm sure every GM has had this experience in that, right? You have a very detailed list of things that are going to happen and you've got all this content, right? All this beautiful content set up. And then the players come along and they basically put their foot in the butt of your plans at minute 15 of tonight's adventure, right? We've all had this experience, I'm sure. And so they immediately skip to the end. And then you're like, okay, great. Now what are we going to do? I'm going to have to ad lib the rest of this because they've not ruined everything. I won't use that word, but they've solved the problem, right? Whatever problem I presented them with, they thought of a way to fix it. They thought of a way to do it that I never would have thought of in a million years. And now I have to figure something else out. So instead of specifically writing like a whole lot of very detailed notes, I just kind of, I outline now. And I let the players fill in the rest of it because it's an interactive medium, right? It's cooperative storytelling. So players are going to do things that you never would expect in a million years. And that happens more often. It just happens quite a bit. And so I sort of gave up on the very detailed writing and just come up with different story arcs and where those come from, you know, like the current story arc that we're working within my Marvel campaign now, I sat down last summer and I was thinking about the origin story of the entirety of our universe, right? And I realized that there wasn't one. I hadn't thought that far back because there was no reason to. So, but I thought, well, hey, maybe I'll sit down and just write about that because that seems like, you know, everybody should have an origin story. All heroes have origin stories. The universe should have an origin story, damn it. So I sat down to write it and I only wrote like a handful of notes. I mean, maybe like 3 or 4 pages of notes, but born of those 3 or 4 pages of notes has been the campaign that we've been working on now for almost an entire year. So the, a handful, 3 or 4 ideas put together have spawned this entire campaign that we've been working out. And it's been a lot of fun. And this is probably, I think, this has probably been one of the best ones thus far, I think. I would let my players ultimately decide that, but at least it feels that way in terms of the writing and how everything has come together. And so, yeah. Plus, I mean, also in terms just of writing itself, right? Like I get inspiration anywhere. Like I very much believe that inspiration and knowledge you can find anywhere in the world if only you look for them. And so the of course I would do research for Marvel in terms of like a long time ago I was interested in creating a missile defense system for our Marvel universe, and a villain who was going to be in charge of it, and so on and so forth. So I did a lot of reading about missile defense systems and how all that worked way back when, and how the technology has progressed, but not very much, despite the fact that during the Cold War, you know, we spent billions and billions of dollars, and we don't really have much of a missile defense system to show for it after the fact. So all of that research, all of that reading is something that I love to do. I love to read, period, and I love to write. So gaming for me is a natural sort of thing in terms of again, just grabbing inspiration from anywhere, like, and specifically from players. And I have to give a shout out to all of my players again, because they are awesome. And here's a very specific story, a very specific reason why. Mm-hmm. So again, to reference the supervillain that I have, Mr. Anarchy. Mr. Anarchy always dresses in red. He always has a suit on, right? He has a consort. Her name is Ms. Mayhem. And of course, they go on around the world or wherever, creating havoc just for havoc's sake, basically. And I forget the precise details of the adventure where we came to realize that Mr. Anarchy loved crayons. And what I mean by that is there were crayons naturally in the game environment, right? I don't remember where the players were, but there were crayons in the environment. And so my friend David Campbell, who was playing his character is John Black, who was a spirit bearer. I won't get into all the details of that, but he went to pick up the crayon as a way to threaten Mr. Anarchy, like, oh, if I break this crayon, right, he'll be mad, won't he? Basically, right? And up until that point in time, I had never said anything about crayons. I had never said anything about Mr. Anarchy liking to draw or anything to that effect at all, other than the fact that he wore red. But in that particular moment, I realized, and what Dave had already realized, which I had not realized yet, was that kind of threat, right? Just picking up an innocent red crayon that has nothing to do with the situation that they're involved in. But because of, again, Mr. Anarchy's character, it's something that he would care about. Like, it fit perfectly within the bounds of his character and the kind of crazy supervillain that he is, such that at that point, once Dave's character picked up that crayon, Mr. Anarchy stopped. It was like, okay, dude, like, all right, just don't hurt the crayon and everything will be fine, right? So, but I didn't create that. And that's one of the things I really love about gaming, is that players will just throw stuff at you. Like, is this happening? Is that happening? Or if I take this particular action, which again, I never would have thought of in a million years. And it creates a whole other dimension of the character. So much so that I wrote an entire adventure about how Mr. Anarchy lost his, well, not he lost his crayons, but they got stolen. And so again, Mr. Anarchy, in the Marvel Universe, has the power of, you know, multiplication. He can make multiple copies of himself. He can make 40 copies of himself at a time. Well, come to find out, like, the dirty, rotten scoundrel who sold his crayons was a rogue copy of himself.
Oh, that's cool. That's neat.
Thank you, sir. So it was really funny in that, right, like, you can actually, if you've lost your mind and you can make multiple copies of yourself, it's perfectly feasible that you would steal your crayons from yourself. But the point is that actually an Avenger lost his life in the line of duty during the mission to recover Mr. Anarchy's crayons from himself, which I had not intended to happen. I was not trying to assassinate that particular character, didn't have anything against that particular character. I really liked the character, but it was just one of those things that happened. But had Dave, you know, again, like a month, you know, years previous, had he not picked up that crayon, like, that character wouldn't have died in that way. But those two events are connected. And I love that crazy sort of rolling adventure. You know, you never know quite what's going to happen because it's interactive in a way and people are involved. And it's always, there's that great, like, energy that comes out of gaming that you can't really get in any other medium that I'm familiar with. So I just love, I love gaming for that reason. I mean, many reasons, but that's specifically one of them. How, you know, a player can throw something at you that you never ever thought of, and you may react to it, you know, poorly, but, you know, hopefully that's not the case, and you're able to take that and just run with it. Like another just quick example, the again, to reference the, my our Avengers game, specifically a sadistic game show from another universe had showed up to planet Earth, and it's called Death Wheel 2. And so basically Death Wheel 2 shows up again. It's multiversal, so they're uber crazy powerful, and they say to the Earth, listen, give us some of your heroes to be on our show. And if you do, right, like, we won't blow up your planet immediately. Otherwise, there's going to be a new asteroid belt here in the next 40 seconds, unless you agree to these terms. So at any rate, this game show happens. And of course, like, they do all kinds of weird stuff and all kinds of very destructive stuff. Because, again, it goes back to the I like action. It's that whole thing writ large. but very specifically, there was a, I had intended for a meteor to come hurtling towards the Earth as basically their first test. And so that was the thing that the Avengers were going to have to jump up and take care of. They were going to have to stop this meteor. So as I'm describing it, like, there's something hurtling towards the Earth at, you know, like, incredible speed. You know, what are you going to do? And I forget exactly who asked the question. They're like, well, what is it? And I, before I could answer what it was, somebody said, is it a giant apricot? Where the heck they got giant apricot from, I will never know. But because the whole thing was already so absurd anyway, I thought, well, why not, right? Like, if some interdimensional game show shows up, why, they could just throw a giant apricot that's the size of, a quarter the size of the moon. Why the hell not, right? So the Avengers flew up there and they took out the apricot that would have ended the Earth. So I would also say specifically in terms of, like, game style, if players throw fun ideas at me, like, I generally pick them up and run with them, because to me, like, a meteor hitting the Earth, okay, that's, it's certainly more dramatic. A meteor is definitely going to end the Earth. If an apricot the size, a quarter the size of the moon was hurtling towards the Earth, would that end the Earth? I don't know. But it was more fun that way, so I don't care.
It made for a good story. And that ties into, you mentioned this in the earlier, where gaming allows you amount of flexibility in the storyline that you don't find in other types of games and other media. And then again, you tie that in with, okay, the players come up with something funny just offhand, and you're like, hey, wait a minute. I know I had this kind of suspenseful outline, and that, you know, hey, this meteor is going to hit, but okay, it's a giant piece of fruit that's going to potentially destroy the Earth. Now, there are millions of people playing online multiplayer games, and some of them are kind of skeptical of tabletop role-playing games like Marvel Superheroes, Dungeons and Dragons, Pathfinder, just to name a few, many, many other examples, but they kind of look at those like, well, you know, that's old school stuff, that's old way of doing it. Now we have Dungeons and Dragons Online, which is basically a multiplayer online game. World of Warcraft, of course, you know, the largest, I think, globally, along with a huge number of players playing things like StarCraft and Halo and other games like that, all in a multiplayer universe. What would you say to someone who's like, well, you know what, there's not enough action here, there's not enough suspense, I've got these cool graphics and I can talk to people all over the world and run these games online, versus, okay, I'm gonna sit down here and I'm gonna pretend to be a dwarf, you know, fighting a dragon? What would you say to someone who kind of challenges that, well, multiplayer games give you everything that you can get on the tabletop and you don't have to set up everything?
I specifically, sir, I've thought about this question, and I have two immediate responses to that. I love the fact that, like, the way that we're doing this right now, right? Like, you're sitting in your house, I'm in my house, Ed is in his place, right? Like, we are,
I'm in the back cave,
in
I don't know
completely
where you
different
are.
Environments, right? And we are able to, you know, via technology, right, communicate and be able to just make this podcast, right? And I love that. That's a great thing. It's a great tool, right? And, of course, that allows us to, you know, play games, like you said, you know, World of Warcraft and so on and so forth. But the thing that I love, and this is my philosophy about games specifically, I have a Wii, and so like when the Wii first came out, it was also PlayStation, was it 3 at that time?
I think so, somewhere along, yeah.
And then whatever Xbox was out at that particular point in time. And so one of the things that I did not like and still don't like if we wanted to play, I can't even think of a particular game, but if it was for Sony or if it was for Xbox, like you had to have an Xbox, I had to have an Xbox. We both had to have copies of the game. And then presumably we're also like, we almost have to be separated in order to play together. And I don't like that. And that's one of the reasons why I bought a Wii U, is because then literally like, it was old school in the sense that, you know, if you came over and played, or if Sunday came over and played, or whoever, but like, not everybody has to have their own system. They don't have to have a copy of the game. I have a system and a copy of the game. I just need some more controllers and we can all get together and have a good time. And that's and to me, the best games literally bring people together and keep them engaged, not just with the game, but with one another. Because at the end of the day, like, okay, it's about communication, it's about interaction, it's about getting to know people. And if a game doesn't do that, I'm not nearly as impressed. So again, I think of WoW more as like it's an extension of a tool that works really well, and there's nothing wrong with that in and of itself. But if I can play games with people in person, like, I always prefer that, because that kind of experience you just can't get any other way, you know, at least not now. Maybe in the future when the tech's better. And, you know, I walk into a virtual room with my virtual avatar, but it feels like the real world as much as it can. I mean, like, if, you know, if it's Matrix level technology, okay, then by that point in time, it won't matter. But right now we don't have that. So that's my first, I wouldn't even call it a criticism as much as I call it a critique, right? It's, my second critique is this: in RPGs, since day one, we've had fully destructible environments.
Yeah.
Like, and it doesn't matter where in the world it is. If you want to, like, if you want to blow up the Leaning Tower of Pisa, you can do that tomorrow. Right? I mean, we could do that tonight. You know, we can do that right now. And we don't have to have a whole lot of setup, you know, as long as we both, I mean, you understand how Marvel works. I understand how Marvel works. We could have an entire adventure about blowing up the Leaning Tower of Pisa right now. And I love that about gaming. And again, in terms of freedom, right? Like, you can get a crazy idea. Because again, to reference my earlier idea about that sadistic intergalactic interdimensional game show, I thought that would be a cool idea. And I was able to, in a very short amount of time, like, I thought of the idea and I had to sit on it for a long time. But as soon as it was ready, I was able to just throw it in my game. And again, it was just basically just for that night. But still, it was so much fun. I made up like each particular character. There were advertisements that related to that character. I was able to draw the players in a different way. And it's, again, like the, and really, at the end of the day, it's about freedom. And RPGs give us so much freedom. And even to the point where, like, if there's a rule in a computer game that you don't like, right? I mean, there are mods and stuff, I get that. But if there's a basic rule that you don't like, you can't change it. Like, you're stuck with it, right? Because somebody else has already made that decision. It's part of the damn game. But again, with an RPG, if there's a rule that we really don't like, or we think is stupid, or if we know is broken in some fashion, we can fix it and move on. So
that's cool.
That's what I would say to folks who have not, if you haven't played an RPG, it's not for everybody. Granted, it's not for everybody, but it is a lot of fun, and I encourage everybody to do it if they can. If you've ever even thought about it, like, at least try it. Because again, you know, it's not for everybody, but it's so much fun, and I just love it so much. So that's where I'm at.
That's awesome. That's a great answer. I appreciate that. So now, kind of tying into that one, kind of building on that, if you were, okay, you mentioned, yeah, role-playing's not necessarily for everyone, you know, and kind of work with people. How do you go about approaching that subject, you know, to You know, we all have non-gamers in our lives in some fashion or another. How do you approach the topic of role-playing games to non-gamers? You know, what are the some of the things that you do, or just some of the experiences you might have had when this question came up? You know, for example, I've got people I work with, and you know, they ask about what Gen Con is that I go, and it's like, well, it's a big science fiction fantasy gaming convention, and people look it up online. They're like, wait a minute, they're like Dungeons and Dragons? It's like, oh yeah, I'm into that type of thing. So how would you approach that? How kind of building on that? You know, it's just if someone was interested in it, how would you go about approaching this subject and explaining what a tabletop RPG is to someone who is new to this, or who someone who may be looking at this and like, what exactly is this? Is how do I know if I'm going to enjoy it? You know, tell me about it. How do you broach that topic with someone?
That's a great question. I haven't really done that a whole lot. The handful of times that I have, and I haven't had good luck with this. Let me put it that way. I just haven't had good luck with it because people, they've asked me like, okay, so what is it that you do exactly? Again, right, you get that question. And they're like, I'm like, well, the short answer is that I sit around at a table with my friends and we pretend that we're superheroes. And they're like, okay, do you have uniforms? Like, do you dress up? I'm like, no. Like some people do. We do not. Right. And the other thing is that I don't mean to belittle anybody's imagination. I don't mean my answer in this way. It may sound like that, but that's not what I'm getting at. Like they're sort of like the 8-year-old me. Like they want to know where the game board is. Like where are the pieces at? Like where does the game happen? Yeah. Right. And I've tried to explain, well, it's in your imagination. So it's, and the best answer that I've come up with is I stole from my friend Steve who lives in New York, is that it's co-op storytelling. It's cooperative storytelling. I lay out the world. I lay out the background. I lay out the events that have occurred. And then the players decide, you know, what they're going to do about them. And some people seem to get it. Other people, they just kind of like shake their heads. They're like, well, I don't know about that. So I would definitely not pick me to be an ambassador for RPGs because I can't explain it to folks.
I do like that idea of a cooperative storytelling. And it seems to tie into your game mastering style pretty well. Now, kind of ask this question. You know, you take the time to draft these stories, you put the players into it, and it is kind of a cooperative thing when you're working with your players. As a game master, is there a particular decision or something that happened in the game that you're like, man, that was a bad call? Or, you know what, this sounded so good on paper, and when I put it out there, it just, house of cards, it just fell in on itself. Is there anything where you've had this idea where you're like, no, this is going to be awesome, and it kind of just went completely south on you, or it just went a completely different direction that's like, no, this isn't working at all. This was a bad move. Anything like that ever come up in this storytelling option you have, you know, this cooperative storytelling that you're doing with these players in Marvel or Top Secret, or any of the games that you've run in the past?
Yes. So to reference the earlier something earlier that I brought up specifically, the supervillain that had come up with the missile defense system. His name is Dr. Sullivan. Anyway, Dr. Sullivan, to make a long character history very short, was a member of the military. He was brilliant, so brilliant. He was like 30 years ahead of his time, but that just made him essentially like his colleagues just didn't understand what the hell he was talking about. So anyway, he knew he was brilliant. He couldn't convince his superiors that he was brilliant, so he wound up leaving and creating the laser missile defense system that he had always dreamed of. And this was very early on when I was first GMing. And so I had all these stats, right? I had like 6 different laser satellites, and like the targeting system only got better. Like each round it got like one column shift better, and the lasers themselves got more powerful as time went by. Again, each round they got a little bit more powerful, because now they were, they were used for missile defense, but they were also essentially guarding his evil villain lair. So if any pesky, you know, hero showed up, he could turn on his laser defense system, and they would be, anybody who was attacking would be constantly, you know, dodging this this laser fire, you know, from orbit. And So I had the map all drawn out, and so as soon as they get there, of course, the laser fire starts, and you know, there are heroes dodging lasers, hiding behind rocks, dodging lasers, hiding behind rocks. But because the compound that they were going to was so large and so sprawling, what I realized after like the fifth or sixth round of combat was A, people were starting to lose interest, and B, it was because they're just dodging the same thing. They're doing the same thing. They're making the same rolls over and over again. And it was, despite the fact that I thought, you know, this is awesome. I got lasers in the sky. I got lasers in orbit. How cool is that? But this is super boring because that's all that they're doing and they're not getting to the action. So I realized, okay, enough of the orbital lasers. And so I just cheated for them and got them to the front door as fast as I could after that.
Because cool. Again, so you adapted pretty well to it. So that's pretty cool. But it really, it does beg the question, can you ever have too many orbital lasers, especially in a Marvel Superheroes game?
No, you may not. You cannot have too many orbital lasers.
Yeah, there's just bring more on. So that's the great thing. So kind of switching gears a little bit, we talked about a couple different game systems there. And in some of the other podcasts, you know, this was one of the questions I really wanted to kind of keep going because it seemed to, and I know for me personally, it's a tough one to answer. Of all the games that are out there, tabletop role-playing games, which one is your favorite and why? Can you pin it down to one?
Yes, I can pin it down to one. I know there's a lot of love for D&D, and D&D was like the first sort of experience that I got as a player, specifically, not as a GM. But I have an unabashed love. I love Marvel so very much. And the reason, there are many reasons why, but the biggest one is its simplicity in that there's one chart and it runs the whole game. Now, granted, there are two tables. There's like two range tables. And that's it. And then it's the check chart, right? It's a green feat, a yellow feat, or a red feat. And that's it. That's the whole game. And I love that there's a whole role-playing game based on this idea of intensity, right? Like if it's a typical intensity door, and if I hit it with a good intensity punch, I break open the door, right? If I hit that typical intensity door, right, with an amazing, you know, 50 punch, right, there is no door left. It's reduced to ashes or splinters because you've applied so much force to it. And that very simple idea of just intensity, right? No matter what it is, whether it be breaking down a door or so if the heroes meet somebody, they meet an NPC, depending on how popular they are, if the PCs are very popular, right, they'll do better in just a straight roll. So it's the intensity of their popularity versus the intensity of like, dislike, or neutrality of the NPC. You roll some dice and you have an answer. And I love that about Marvel. It makes things super easy, super fast, super fun. Like I don't, there's not a lot of rules lawyering in Marvel. Again, a lot of it, for me, again, it's about having fun. Like I don't come to somebody's house to argue all night, you know, about the rules or what page this is on, or so on and so forth. I like to keep things moving. And Marvel definitely lends itself to that kind of style, I think, of play and of GMing, because you're just able to, because again, in most of my decisions are, I decide an intensity about any particular thing, a tornado, a car crash, you know, fill in the blank, an apricot from space, right? I decide the intensity of the apricot from space, and then of course the players use their skills and we just make rolls. And I mean, they use the powers, which of course are all ranked, right, in the same way. So it's intensity mm-hmm. versus intensity, and you roll some dice and you have a result, boom, and you move on. So I love Marvel. Now, granted, like 90% of my role-playing experience has come from that, so maybe that's not fair exactly, but I don't care. I love Marvel that much, and it's because it's simple and fast. So I wouldn't... I wouldn't trade Marvel for anything in that regard. It's definitely my most favorite role-playing game. Followed actually probably by... Actually, I don't know where number two is exactly, because I don't know. Number two would be the hard one. For me, number one is the easiest one. Number two and three, yeah. I don't know yet, actually.
And it's a shame, you know, Marvel's been out of print for many years. It's and you're talking, you know, the original TSR Marvel Superheroes role playing game. You know, they've come up with several different variations of it, and I know they none of those follow up versions really seem to capture. Because I played a lot of Marvel Superheroes too, and I know what you mean with that capturing that essence, that simplicity yet complicated enough to really get it going. So that's good. That's really cool answer. I know a lot of the previous podcasts, there's a lot of favoring on certain games just seem to keep popping up there. So cool to represent that. So kind of going into a little bit of what you're, you know, we talked a little bit about your game mastering style. Now, when you're, you know, a lot of action in the games, you know, but you did mention story. You outline something and you kind of this cooperative storytelling. What is it you're looking for? What's the goal when you sit down and, you know, okay, we're going to meet every Sunday night, we're going to play Marvel, and what is it you're looking to kind of provide your players? Are you looking to tell a story? Are you looking for a thrill ride of adventures or encounters? Or are you looking at testing their ability to survive or some combination of all three? So kind of what are you looking to accomplish? Okay, we're going to start. We're going to be here for a couple hours. What am I hoping to do in this game? Can you give a little input into what that game master thought process is?
Absolutely. The thing that I always go back to, and again, I'm sure it's also a product again of having played Marvel for so long, and not even Marvel, but like just role playing games in general, right? Games are supposed to be fun. Like the interaction is supposed to be fun. Now, of course, right? Like inter-party conflict or, you know, certain drama that doesn't go right. You know, I mean, there's always going to be ebbs and flows, right? But at the end of the day, the thing that I want to create for players is a fun environment where anything is kind of possible, such that in a to tell another story about gaming. So again, Marvel Universe is complicated in that there's an Avengers campaign, there's a SHIELD campaign, and then there's the Melvin Crumdick School for Gifted Youngsters campaign. So that's the smallest one of them all in terms of players, but those heroes, who again are all, they're not children. One of them is a minor, but the other two are his parents. We all play together. But the point being is that those characters came across a dragon. They were able to befriend the dragon. But then the question became, where do we keep dragon? Right? Because dragons are dangerous. What? How do we do that? So one of the Avengers said, hey, listen, here's what we'll do. We'll build a danger room and then we'll put the dragon in the danger room. That's where we'll keep the dragon. That's where we'll study it. That's where everybody will be safe. And the dragon will think it's just in its natural environment. Okay, great. Well, for reasons that I could remember if I thought about it long enough, but the point is that the kid players, they broke the dragon out of the danger room and set it free. Because they had befriended the dragon, that's why. So they set the dragon free. Well, then that Avengers character now had a $750 million danger room that wasn't being used, right? Because its whole reason for being was now gone. So then the kids decided amongst themselves that it would be cool to have a disco, to have a dance club inside the danger room, because because it's a danger room, right? So it can change. It can be a different club every night, right? And so now the danger room that was a dragon pen is now a disco. And in the context of the story, it all makes complete sense. It sounds insane, right? Like, this would never happen in real life, but in a comic book, you can get away with stuff like that. And that kind of fun, right? Or again, where anything is possible, anything can happen, and often does. That's one of the things that I really love, creating that fun kind of environment. And also, like, it's I don't know if it's so much about, I mean, I guess it is about testing. I would say it's about testing players. Like, I like to surprise players when I can. I like to so like when the final villain is revealed, like in the climactic scene, right, that the campaign we've been working on for, you know, X amount of months is about to unfold, right? Like that it's the climactic moment that I love the most, because then I know, like, did I do a good job? Like, how do they react? Are they like, oh my God, I can't believe that's what happened? Or they're like, oh yeah, we saw that coming, you know?
Yeah.
So of course I shoot for the, oh my God, like we never saw that coming. Like, oh, you're such an evil genius, right? That's the sort of thing that I'm looking for, right? Like, that was such a great story, you know? Because it was, you know, we had twists and we had turns, and, you know, then this happened and that happened. And so that I love to get that sort of reaction. I like to make players think, right? Because there are times when I know the villains are going to do things in the course of a campaign that when they first happen, they make no sense. Or the heroes are just scratching their heads like, why the hell did that happen? What? That doesn't make any sense. Like, why would he do that? Huh? And then 2-3 months later, down the line, again, when the climax is revealed and the resolution occurs, and they're like, oh, that makes perfect sense now. So some detail that I dropped, you know, months ago, when the whole storyline comes together in that climax, you know, I can see the light bulb sometimes come on in their heads. They're like, oh wow, that was really cool. So everything it's falls stuff into like place. That. And also, Right. And when that, that's one thing that I've tried to work on in terms of my own writing and pacing, where like I'll begin things, I get an idea and I'll begin something and I'll have an idea for how, you know, how the climax is going to resolve. And I either do it too slowly, or then I get another idea and some other villains show up and then there are complimentary, you know, villain stories going on at the same time, or not even complimentary, but just ones that, because again, I got an inspiration and I wanted to see how it was going to work right away. So sometimes like it can be messy in that regard, but also at the same time, I don't feel bad about that so much, just as long as everybody's having fun. I think, again, to go back to the beginning point, that's my ultimate goal. And as long if the people that I've played with had the privilege and honor of playing with for the last, like, you know, 7 years, if they've had a quarter of the fun that I've had, then it's all been more than worth it. So
that's cool. That is very, very cool. Oh, thank you. Now, kind of flipping that. So, you know, as a game master, you're controlling story and everything. But when you're a player, what are you looking for from another game master or a dungeon master when you're in that game? Kind of like you're sitting down, okay, I've created a character. What are you kind of looking for? When you're getting ready to play, what are you chomping at the bit to see? What do you look for in other games?
I'm glad you brought that up. I listened to the podcast with Ray, and holy cow, I'd love to play one of Ray's games. Because that whole idea he had about having, like, what was it? I'm gonna start a campaign and build characters in one game system, and then we're gonna pick everything up and transfer the game and characters into another system, and then yet another system, and then I'm gonna let the players decide how that's going to work. That blew my mind. I was like, that is one of the most original, coolest ideas I've heard in gaming in forever. I don't know how the hell he's gonna do it, but I'd love to hear how that turns out. I was so excited when I heard that. What's that?
We're all looking forward to see how he's going to pull that off. So,
yeah. I was like, dude, that sound, wow, that's so cool. So, I was, again, just blown away. So, Ray, wherever you are, if you're listening, like, props. what was your question, dude? I'm sorry, I got lost.
Well, oh, no. You did kind of tie into it there. You know, as a player, what are you looking for in the game? You know, and I see that you kind of like that idea, like, hey, kind of shifting this around from games to game system. But when you've got your character and you're sitting down ready to play, what are you kind of looking for to from the other game master or other dungeon master? What kind of experience? What are you looking for them to do?
That's a great question. I guess what I'm looking for is I'm about pacing in that, like, for example, if I'm very, okay, let me back up a second. I'm about pacing. And what I mean by that specifically is we normally play till about midnight or so on Sunday night. And let's say it's 10:30, 11 o'clock. And I know that like the battle that I had planned, we haven't got to yet for whatever reason, right? But I know it's going to take an hour and a half or longer to resolve. So at that point, like I'm more than willing to say, okay, right, this is a good place to stop, because what we're going to do next is going to take us well beyond like our like scheduled stop time. And so I like to be respectful of people's time, specifically in that way, because I mean, you know, we all work, we all have jobs, we all have lives that, you know, when we're not superheroing, right? Like,
yeah, exactly.
Right. We're doing our 9-to-5 gig. So specifically, right? Like I like it when really what I'm looking for out of a GM is not so much in terms of like content. It's not really that. Is my GM like on top of his game? And what I mean by that is he the one running the game? Because that's, you know, because there are some times where there are players who will kind of jump in quite a bit, right? And like, so who's actually the game master here? You know, that sort of thing I don't like.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because again, I don't mind, you know, if players are busy talking to one another, you know, I don't mind that. Right. But when the GM needs to take charge and kind of move things along, or when a story is kind of getting bogged down, or when players are, you know, losing interest for whatever reason, right? Like it's the GM's job to pick up on all of that and then fix it, right? To again, move the story along, move the pacing along. Again, don't be afraid to say, like, if we need to stop here, we need to stop here, right? Unless you're positive that you can get it done, you know? So really, I look at GMs and I think about, you know, organization and how organized they are. And like, I do appreciate props. Like, I love props. I love that sort of thing. I make some every now and again.
Uh-huh.
But I don't look for them. Because again, for me, it's about like, is the game fun, right? Because JPEG and I were talking about this the other night specifically, right? Like some of the best games, right, are impromptu, or they kind of happen, right? Like it's not necessarily the amount of planning that goes into a game, or the execution or the research, as much as it is everybody being in that kind of a spirit. And if it just happens to happen on a random night when you're all together, there's no reason to fight that, right? You might as just go with it, roll with it, you know, pull out your gaming books and, you know, have a great time. So really, I just look for the GMs who are fun, right? And how do they provide it? And again, I look at it as a learning experience, because I know for a fact that I do not know everything, far from it. So being in a different game environment would certainly allow me to, you know, soak up, you know, steal things from people, or not. Well, yeah, well, steal tricks, steal storylines from GMs. Because again, inspiration and knowledge, they're everywhere, and more so even with other game masters. So that's what I would look for.
Thank you. That's a great answer. Because it sometimes people forget, you know, it's game masters are also running games too. We're in games, and you know that it kind of, you get that feel from both sides of the game master screen. Now, if there was someone that's just kind of starting out, you've mentioned it, you have some younger players, and with players who, not all game masters necessarily like to work with new players. Some of them prefer to work with experienced players, and you know they have a particular gaming style or organizational style, and they only want people that understand the rules of the game. They don't really, you know, kind of go through the basics and the 101 of, okay, here's Marvel 101, D&D 101. Okay, you're not sure how to play this game system? Well, let's start at level one, then maybe starting at a little higher level. What kind of advice would you give someone who's just starting out in the hobby of tabletop role-playing games? You know, there's a lot of different things coming out with different board games and things along those lines. But when, you know, someone's looking to kind of make this jump into and say, hey, what would you tell them to expect in, okay, you're going to roll up this character, you're going to sit at the table, and, you know, this is what's going to happen. What kind of advice would you give someone who's just starting out and kind of looking to get involved in this? What would you kind of, your words of wisdom?
That's a great question. As far as telling new players, I would just simply advise them, right, whatever game that you happen to be playing, presumably, right, like, you would know somebody already. I mean, and maybe you don't, but don't be afraid to ask questions. Don't be afraid to... The thing that I find most about new players is that they're afraid that they're going to do something wrong. They're afraid they're going to screw something up. And I've tried to explain to new players, like, you can't really do anything wrong, right? Like, if you tell me your character wants to go out and have a dinner at a fancy restaurant right now, right, for whatever reason, just because you've decided to, right, like, you can do that. Like, that's a thing that you can do. And sometimes I think that players, new players specifically, kind of get overwhelmed with the idea of the fact that they can do pretty much anything that they want, right? And
yeah, there are no limits.
Right, right. There really are no limits. Now, that doesn't mean there aren't repercussions, because there are always repercussions. But they can, again, it's that freedom thing that we have, right? We have all of the freedom. And I think that's a weird experience for new players at first, because they're like, well, shouldn't I be, like, you know, superheroing? Well, of course. But, you know, when you're not superheroing, what is your character doing? Oh, I don't know. Well, you know, let's work on that. So I would advise, or again, thinking about new, when I think about new players, I think specifically that that kind of freedom is kind of weird at first, but that it's not a bad thing. And again, like, I know people, right, kind of in general are afraid to ask questions. They don't want people to think that they're dumb, but this is one of those instances where I rarely think someone will think you're dumb if you ask them a gaming question about the rules or about characters or what should I do here? Because the thing that I think we can all agree on this, that as role players, as role playing geeks, we love to talk about role playing.
That's true.
Right? Like, we will tell you our whole gaming life story if you will only listen.
That's really the idea behind these podcasts. It's just, here, tell me about your gaming life. And here, oh, right, someone's wants to hear about this. So,
right, right. Like, again, given enough time, right, like, I could give you an entire oral history, right, of my beloved Marvel Universe. Obviously, we don't have time for that, and that's not what this is about. But again, right, so new players should never, ever be afraid. Don't ever be afraid to ask somebody a question, right? Because, again, you will get a very detailed, very thorough answer about whatever you may be confused about. Because, again, most of the people that I know who play RPGs are A, knowledgeable, B, they like to have fun, and C, they're friendly, and D, because of all of those aforementioned things, and because they're geeks, yes, they will answer your question. And if they don't know, they'll look it up or they'll find somebody who does for you. So it's, new players should never, they should never, ever be afraid, because there's really no reason to be afraid. I have never, because there's a lot about, because of my limited D&D experience, just to give my own personal example, right? Like, when we were just playing, like, last week, and there was a question about armor class, and I had no idea. I'm like, did I hit? Like, I don't know, because this is just a system I haven't played with very much, so I don't know.
Now, would you say that the Dungeon Master in that particular game you had, would you terrible. Rank him as terrible?
Terrible.
Okay. Yeah.
No. Not
that part might get edited out. So let me check. Let's back up here. So
no. Great song. Thank you for coming to GM for us. I've had a lot of fun playing, and I hope that goes
there
on
was
for
a shameless
very long
plug
time
for my own game. So it just so that was that's a horrible thing to do for you to you in the middle of an interview to put you in the spot like that. But you're going to get extra experience for it. So.
No. I've had a lot of fun. Thank you for coming so much and playing with us, because I haven't played 5th edition, and I heard so much about it. Have you read, there's a book, and I have it, and I don't have it nearby, but it's a guy wrote it, it's called Of Dice and Men. Have you heard of this book?
I haven't.
Oh, I haven't. Okay.
No, that's Of Dice and Men?
Of Dice and Men, yes. It was a guy, I think he writes for the Times, and he wrote a whole history about Dungeons and Dragons and how it all came about. And then meanwhile, like, the campaign that he was playing in at that time, there are elements of that run throughout it. So he tells, like, two parallel stories.
I have to check that out. So that sounds like a pretty cool book to check out. So No, thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule, because I know there's a lot of players that you need to make suffer and to put into impossible death traps to get out of. But just any...
You're absolutely right. As they only get more and more impossible as they get more and more powerful, which is my own stupid fault. But that's another story for another time. Go ahead, sir.
That's the podcast part two. Do you have any final thoughts for new and experienced players? Any kind of final round out of like, hey, here's what I think of the hobby. If you're not doing this, this is what you should be doing. Any final thoughts for our listeners?
Oh, just to jump back to, I know apparently, well, there are some GMs that don't like new players. I love new players, and I love new players because they have a fresh perspective, right? Like, some of the best ideas about how to solve, you know, whatever problem I've thrown at them have come from brand new players who just for like, they think for like a half second and they're like, wait a minute, what if we did this? And problem solved again, right? In like 30 seconds versus sometimes experienced players, they get wrapped up in the, you know, like, how should we do this? How should I use my skills? Like, we have to do it this way. We have to do it that way. It's kind of, sometimes the thinking is kind of regimented, whereas, you know, a brand new player isn't regimented yet in that particular way. Like, they kind of don't know what they're doing, and they kind of do it at the same time. But it's that really nice interaction between I can't think of a better word than regimented necessarily. But like, new players are awesome, and so I definitely encourage anybody who's had any curiosity about role playing games in any way, shape, or form, please get involved. And finally, if there are any, I'm looking for another female player for our Marvel Sunday night game. We only have one woman, but we've always had one woman, and I'm very proud of that fact, because there aren't enough women in gaming, and I don't know how we fix that, but I'm all for figuring out how. So if we need to have a commission, I volunteer to be president of that commission.
We'll get to work on that. So just because, well, I think that is something, you know, you kind of bring up an interesting point that, especially in looking at Gen Con, I don't see a lot of women getting involved in Marvel. There seems to be more now. It does seem like it's the questions being asked, and it seemed to seem like popular culture when you look at YouTube. And various games like World of Warcraft, and Heroes of the Storm, and various other things, you do still see, you seem to see that there is a greater number of women players. I don't know if it's necessarily translating into role-playing, though. I know that there's been a lot more women getting involved in online gaming, but we definitely see that kind of branch over to role-playing, so... But just absolutely, experiences at Gen Con, it does seem to be a mostly male-dominated hobby, it seems. But you know, definitely something we'd like to get more people involved in. And it's all-encompassing, because I think really you can find a role for anyone in a role-playing game. You know, we're able to be that hero that we want to be, regardless of what our situation is, regardless of what we think. You know, I've seen a lot of people that are introverts really kind of come out in games, and, you know, and really kind of find their own in this. So it's just a, you know, good point. Thank you. So, well, I want to thank you, Anarchy, for taking the time to sit with us and kind of go over and talk about this hobby that we all really do love and enjoy so much. And I want to thank our listeners, everyone who's tuned in to the various DM series podcasts as we start this next phase of them, and I would encourage everyone to check out evolvingrpg.com for more interviews. If you like this one, we've got a whole previous series hosted by Nexa in our phase one, interviewing a bunch of our Dungeon Master and Game Master friends, and I would also encourage you to check out the website for various articles. We have a lot of great content about role playing and building that sense of community for everyone, so encourage you to check out evolvingrpg.com. And Anarchy, I want to thank you for taking your time to talk to us tonight, and hopefully we get a chance to do this again soon.
Hey, Tom, Nexa, thank you very much for your invitation. I was looking forward to this all week. I was so excited about it. Oh, I was like, yes, nice. Like something that I can talk about intelligently for at least 15 minutes. Yes. So
that is awesome. I'm glad you enjoyed it. So.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate the opportunity. It's been a lot of fun. I spent like the whole week at work thinking about the interviews that I had already listened to, and I was thinking about answering those questions and how would I. So I thought about just gaming pretty much all week and reliving all of the memories and stuff. And so that just by itself is a great experience. I was inspired by you guys, so I appreciate that, and I thank you so very much for what you've done, and it's awesome, and I appreciate being part of it. So thanks. Hey, thank you.
Thank you, Anarchy. It's high praise. Thank you.
My pleasure.
We'll be talking soon. So and I, like I said, so encourage everyone, if you like this interview, the others, check out the site. We've got a lot of great interviews in the DM series. We've got some panel discussions. Hopefully we get Anarchy into some of our panels. We've got working on one right now for one discussing the variances, different gaming systems out there. There seems to be a debate starting about more simple game systems versus more complex ones and pros and cons.
Yes, more simple.
So,
yes, I love it already.
So hopefully we'll get that going here soon, and tune in to the website for more. So thanks, everyone. Take care and have a great time.